Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins. Welcome to another episode of the realm of heroes and monsters Storytime with me, your host, Canadian writer, artist, AP Fuchs. So welcome aboard. This season is going fantastic. I am really happy with sort of the smooth flow between the intro and the story before the story, and then the story itself, and then a little bit of after credits fun. I'm now finally like settling into the groove. We're about a third into the season as a whole, and yeah, it just feels great. I'm really excited. I hope if you've been listening since the beginning of season three that you've noticed maybe a smoother ride as things go along. You know, there's some bumps at the beginning, but now we're kind of on a smoother trail. And that's how it goes, right? Because it's all about finding your voice, finding what works for a particular show or particular season or a particular idea. It takes time, you know? And I do this stuff on the fly. And the reason I do it on the fly is because my entire writing and art career has been on one principle and one principle only: honesty. So if I were to prescript everything and pre-do everything, it doesn't come across as authentic as it could be. So what I'm trying to do is just simply give you, here's the show, here it is, total improv, just tune in and enjoy, and that's all it's about. All right, so now we're going to go into the story before the story, because we're going to talk about something a little bit weird but also true. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the story before the story, where this season we're examining how stories shape our everyday lives and how stories are a part of our lives all the time. So this one, last episode, we talked about you being a character in not only just your life, but also in various circumstances. You are different characters. But now here's an interesting one. You or your friend or your family member or whoever, or even perfect stranger, right? We have a sort of character for them, and they have a character for us. Okay. They don't know. Like, for example, your buddy, let's just pick your buddy Bob. Your buddy Bob. Okay. He doesn't know every single thing about you. He doesn't know every single feeling you're feeling. He doesn't know every single thought you're thinking. He doesn't know every single word you said. Even if you guys were best friends forever, it doesn't matter, because he doesn't know every single detail of your life. He doesn't know what you've been doing when you're not with him. He doesn't know what you've been saying when you're not with him. He doesn't know what you've been doing when you're not with him, and all the rest, right? So what Bob has to do is, even if he's a close friend, is he has no choice but to pick all those pieces that he knows about you and comprise the character that he views you as, that he sees you as, you know, the person he sees you as. He's not getting the full story, so he has no choice but to take all those elements, put them together as best as possible in a puzzle, and if any puzzle pieces are missing, what he'll probably end up doing is, for those missing pieces, he'll fill in the blanks based on what he knows about you, or what he knows about, say, how you feel about a particular topic or a particular issue, or what you might say in a particular circumstance. You know, so what he'll do is he'll take the info at hand and then say, well, most likely this is the outcome that my friend will do in this particular situation. So in other words, he's writing you as a character. Right? It's kind of like half fiction, half nonfiction. And we do that to others all the time. You know, especially people that we just meet, you know, and we only say are part of a social gathering, and we only know this person for, let's just say, 2-3 hours, right? And we have a nice conversation with them, and we learn some things, and we walk away from that social encounter with basically a character of who this person is. We don't know the whole story, right? So what we do is we make them up. We fill in the gaps as best we can, because our brains don't like the fact that we don't have all the information about anything and everything. Our brains are just that way. We're inquisitive by nature. We're curious by nature. So what we'll do is we'll take the info we have, and then we'll work with it, and we'll fill in the gaps as logically as possible based upon the information we have, even though that logical fill in the gap might not be accurate. So yeah, you're a character in somebody's life. They're a character in yours. And That's how it is. I mean, unless you know somebody through and through, which is impossible because, you don't know every single thought, every single feeling, every single everything, every single memory. You know what I mean? We have to fill in the gaps. We have no choice. So you're a character. I'm a character. And even our dogs are a character when you think about it, because we can't read their minds, right? We just kind of take guesses. So everybody's a character to each other. And that's interesting. We're all writing ourselves out as different characters, being perceived as different characters, writing other people as characters, and all that stuff just helps us go through life in general. So again, once again, storytelling, character creation, that is all part of what we do as life. So yeah, characters are not limited to comics. They're not limited to fiction books. They're not limited to movies or any other onstage persona. They're totally part of our nonfiction world. So, and then of course we could also argue the world is fiction, but that's a whole separate discussion and maybe we'll get into it this season, but I highly doubt it because it's kind of controversial. But anyway, point is character creation. We do it all the time. People do it to us. Fact of life. Now, let's go listen to a nice story. Last flight. Axiom Man found the boy's body next to the railroad track while doing a sweep of the city's perimeter. He was fortunate he'd flown low enough to see him. He landed beside the boy and knelt down. Off in the distance, the train continued on its way, and he knew there wasn't enough time to alert the engineer of what was obviously going to happen. The boy was covered in blood on his left side, orange t-shirt and blue jeans torn from the wounds. The child's chest rose and fell in shallow breaths. It was a miracle he was still alive. The train must have just clipped him. Didn't the engineer even know? Axiom Man briefly thought back to the night he first got his powers and how he discovered his ultra strength on a boxcar hauling telephone poles. The boy gasped. Axiom Man scanned his body. The kid's leg was broken, a shard of bone sticking out just below the knee. There seemed to be another break higher up on the leg, but it was difficult to detect the precise damage through the mash of bloody flesh and jeans. The poor boy's arm was also broken. It looked like he had a second elbow across his bicep. "I'm going to get you out of here," Axiom Man said gently. The boy managed to open his eyes and a small smile rose on his lips. Axiom, I got you. Carefully. Oh, so carefully. Axiom Man scooped his arms under the boy. He stood, the boy in his arms, and held him close. The child winced, then his head lolled back, eyes closed. "Hey, stay with me," Axiom Man said. He rose into the sky and immediately headed in the direction of the nearest hospital. He kicked on the speed and flew full force. The boy howled in pain as the wind forced his little body against him. Axiom Man slowed down a little and the boy's wailing ceased. The child's eyes remained closed. "Hey, kid, wake up," Axiom Man said. "You gotta stay awake, okay?" The boy's eyes opened a little. "Must keep him conscious," Axiom Man thought. "Get him talking. What's your name?" The boy pursed his lips, then opened his mouth to speak. Colton. "Hi, Colton. How old are you?" Six, he coughed, and three quarters. "You're a big boy," Axiom Man said, "and strong, too. What's your favorite color?"
Blue.
Colton let out a cry. Axiom Man wondered if he was still flying too fast, but he had to keep up the speed if he was going to get Colton to the hospital in time.
My leg, Colton said.
Axiom Man glanced down at the break again. The boy's thighs was twisted and blood started to gush from the wound.
Cold,
Colton said. The break might have cut the femoral artery, Axiom Man thought. Must hurry. You'll be warm soon enough. Just hang on. He thought about wrapping the boy in his cape, but to do so would require more maneuvering and he didn't want to cause any more pain. Do you have any pets? Colton nodded, but just barely. A dog. His voice trailed on the last word and his head fell back again. Axiom Man adjusted his arms beneath him to angle Colton's head upward. I like dogs too,
Axiom Man said. What's his name? She's a she. She's Belle. Belle. That's a pretty name. Axiom Man searched the streets below and adjusted his flight path so he was now directly in line with the hospital. How about school? What grade are you in? Colton cried out, Arm! My arm! His broken arm had moved. Axiom Man tried adjusting it to a more comfortable position, but Colton kept crying. We're almost there, buddy, Axiom Man said. Just hang on. What grade are you in? Again? One. Grade. Colton's head dipped forward. Colton, wake up. Colton. The boy didn't respond. Colton! The kid's eyes were closed, and Axiom Man could barely feel him breathing. He gave the boy a shake. Any pain inflicted be damned. Colton, wake up! Colton didn't respond. Axiom Man kicked on the speed and went as fast as he could. Colton didn't react from the sudden rush of wind. No, 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 no. Blood sprayed against Axiom Man's costume from the open wound in Colton's leg. The hospital was just below. A few more seconds, and Axiom Man touched down right in front of the ER's doors. They opened automatically, and he rushed in. Help! I need some help! The triage nurse and one other came over running. They rushed up to the boy and started examining him. He got hit by a train, Axiom Man said. The nurses said something about taking the boy further inside, but Axiom Man didn't catch their exact wording. As they moved through the doors that led into the emergency unit beyond the waiting room, the nurse took her hand off Colton's neck and checked his wrist. She pulled out her stethoscope and tapped it in places across his chest. She put her ear to his mouth, then whispered something to the other nurse. A doctor rushed up, and she whispered something to him. Tears were in her eyes when she looked up. I'm sorry, she said. He's gone. A few minutes sooner and maybe... Axiom Man's face cracked beneath his mask. He didn't know if the nurses saw the tears glazing his eyes. He helped them lay Colton's body down on a bed, and Axiom Man stood by while they double-checked his vitals and the doctor did his own examination. The way the nurses moved, much slower than if there was a chance of saving Colton, said it all. Time of death, 2:13, one nurse said. To Axiom Man, I'm sorry. He had passed even before you came in. Tell us what happened. Axiom Man relayed the story and let the nurses know if the parents wanted to talk to him, they could. The hospital would just have to call the cops and an officer would be in touch. Once done, he exited the building. Fortunately, Colton had his name and phone number written on his t-shirt's tag. Good on his parents for that precaution. Standing on the hospital's curb, the regret tore into Axiom Man like a tornado. He shouldn't have slowed down to accommodate Colton's pain. He should have stayed the course and got there as fast as he could, no matter what. Even the nurse said a few minutes would have made all the difference. Those few minutes were lost because he had slowed down. It's my fault, Axiom Man whispered. I'm so sorry, Colton. I'm so sorry. Axiom Man looked to the sky, its blue and sprinkling of clouds a reminder of being up there with Colton. Not today. Today he'd walk. Flying had suddenly lost its appeal.
Thank you.
Welcome back to After the Credits. Now this one here, okay, this thought is both cool and actually kind of frightening in its own way. So let's keep it simple. Global warming, right? Okay, so up north here in Canada, things are melting higher up north. And new ground and new items that have been buried beneath the ice are being revealed because everything's melting away. So now that's great for the resource industry. That's wonderful to create new jobs. That's all kinds of stuff, right? Because we're freeing up land. It's no longer ice or no longer snow. But what frightens me is, as good as it is for resources and potential as a country and GDP and all the rest, what was under that ice? What was under that snow that's been buried for so long? I mean, I'm referring to stuff like, you know, what kind of bacterias are in the on thing, microbials, you know, viruses, things that have not seen the light of day in a horrendous amount of time, right? So humanity has gone on while these items have been buried. So we've adapted to our current environment. We've been able to deal with current diseases, et cetera, but now there's the potential that something unknown could be on Earth because it's just been buried. It's that simple. And that part's a little bit frightening. So my hope is that as things change environmentally, nothing bad is accidentally unleashed just because it's out of our control. It's nature, right? So my hope is, yeah, nothing weird comes about. Or maybe there's a virus in it that's going to trigger the zombie apocalypse. We don't know. But anyway, yeah, it's sort of a dual thought. So something to ponder, especially if you're Canadian, something to consider because, of course, we're closer to the source than anybody else in the world. So, yeah, consider that. We have some good resources, but at the same time, well, we could be basically melting away until doomsday. Have fun.